Hello and welcome to another episode of the Talking Heads podcast with me, Saul Walker.
And me, Lucy Chamberlain.
The crescendo of spring is over and now the long, hazy summer days are here. Colour is the name of the game, whether in our blossoming borders, cute containers or walls of riotous roses. The climax of the gardening year has begun.
The hum of mowers, smell of suntan lotion and sight of hoeing is all but too common on Saul and my estate gardens. Keeping everything looking lovely whilst balancing the time we have to spend on the plethora of jobs is one of the fine arts of any head gardener's role. But remember to take some time out to enjoy your efforts.
Every week, Lucy and I will endeavour to bring you into our world throughout the summer, whether at Stonelands or East Donland Hall, in our own modest gardens packed full of fruit and veg and the odd exotic jungle, or on the road as we travel the country, enjoying the best this industry has to offer.
So, settle back for another episode of Hijinks and Horticultural Waffle, as we take you inside the busy and exciting world of the modern head gardener. So hello and welcome to another episode of Talking Heads podcast with me, Lucy Chamberlain. Mr. Saul Walker is quite deservedly having a week of rest and R&R after a very, very busy summer and autumn. So Saul, I hope you're well rested and having a wonderful, wonderful week. And in the meantime, regular listeners will know that I'm going to do a tribute episode to East Donland Hall this week. My time there and the gardening team's time there has come to an end. At the end of October, we will be no longer working at the hall, which is sad. But what this episode is all about is not being sad. I want to celebrate my time at the hall and the things that we've done there. So I will give you some wonderful insights into the history of this grand place. I'll just put my secateurs down for a second. I'm standing at the moment in the shrub rose border, which is a wonderful collection of really old-fashioned shrub roses. There's damasks, bourbons, all sorts of wonderful evocative varieties here. And if I was standing here in May, late May, early June, there'd be a wonderful scent in the air as well. I'm not. It's now on the cusp of being October, and I'm pushing back all the climbing roses at the moment. We're giving them a winter prune a little bit early because obviously we're trying to shut down the hall for our departure at the end of October. So all the roses are being pruned back as I would for the winter. But this area here holds some really special memories for me because it's one of the last times I saw Sarah. And when we were here, we were oozing all over what's now dormant beneath my feet, which is lots and lots lily and parrot flowered tulips. And when they flower in April time, before the roses come into growth, they look stunning. They really did. And I remember Sarah and I and her daughter, we were oozing over all the different colour forms, especially of the parrot tulips. There's some wonderful real colour breaks in those. And we were talking about how we'd like to have a dress made of this and the fabric from that made into a hat. And it was a lovely, lovely time and a real precious memory for me. And if I just take a step out towards the edge of the border, I could look up along the hot and cold borders, which are also Sarah's babies. We spent a lot of time deciding and deliberating and moving and replenishing and restocking and cogitating, working out the ebbs and flows of herbaceous border management. And just before the hot and cold border is the brown turkey fig that I was so privileged to work on. There's three huge big figs here at the hall. This one in front of me stands about 15 metres wide. It's a beast of a thing. But oh my gosh, the figs that would come off it. Obviously, as head gardener, I did have to quality control one or two. And so did the blackbirds. But Sarah absolutely loved the figs. So I had great pride in making sure I picked them just at the right point of ripeness to take into the kitchens for her to enjoy. So yeah, a really lovely moment just standing here. I very much firstly would like to thank some people because, yes, we did talk about the hall in the previous episode and the situation, and it prompted people to respond, which is really touching. And thank you so very much, because the team, we do really appreciate your support. So, yeah, thanks to two Susans, Bob, Helen, Andrew, Sophie, Jenny, Nick, Charity and Paul, for your lovely, kind words. Really did make me smile. So thank you so much for that. And also thanks to the team. I've been at East Dunallan Hall for 9 years. Didn't quite make my decade, but never mind. It's the longest place I've ever worked at, actually. I was at no other place for as many years, which is testament to how much I really did enjoy the role of being head gardener. It was a wonderful experience. And in those 9 years, I came across some fantastic people, and I want to give them a shout out as well. So sadly, he's passed now, but Terry, who was the head gardener, who then went into retirement as I started, we sort of overlapped for a year or so. Terry was a fine character, and I will be keeping a few memories alive in that I've got access to Terry's diaries, which are a fascinating thing to read for a good 10 years of his time at the Hall. We had a bit of banter, a bit of fun. He was a great character at the Hall. He worked there for a good couple of decades, so Peter and Sarah knew him very, very well. Pat also used to cut the grass. He lived on site with his wife, Roz, who was the housekeeper. And sadly, Pat has now passed as well. Roz is now moved to somewhere local in the village and is having a lovely retirement. So that's lovely to know. Then we've got some staff who actually were employed under my head gardenership. How exciting was that? So thank you to Neil and also to Jade, who we unofficially but officially also called my apprentice. She was with me for a good few years. We had such a laugh. What was discussed in the walls of the Hall stays within the walls of the Hall. We had some really good chats, and it was lovely to see her blossom as a gardener. She's still doing really well these days as well. Nick, also, his obsession with collecting garden machinery has been fantastically useful for us. Whenever we want the meadow cut or something rotivated or a stump ground out or anything that requires a bit of kit, Nick, you have been our man. So thank you so very much for that. Stephen, we had you for a while and you were a joy. You were such a good worker. Your attention to detail and your ability to get a straight line in and weed was second to none. And I could just leave you to it, which was great. And also to our newest recruit, Boo, who has done brilliantly in these last few months, getting to grips with tidying up the rather weedy beds that we had, pruning the roses. She's done a great, great job. So thanks so much to Boo for your time and your energy there. And I must obviously thank my husband, Ian, because anyone who sees how Ian works will know he's just like a shy horse on Red Bull, I think is the only way to describe Ian. But he's taught me a lot, actually. He's taught me a lot about straight edges and hedges. Lots of things that actually really do add polish and finish to a garden. So yeah, thanks, my lovely. It's been great fun working with you, as any married couple does. We occasionally have our little blips. But again, that's the wall's secrets to hold tight onto. So there we go. But yeah, thanks so much for all the fun we've had there. Just having my tea break at 10:30, and you can hear the rattle of the obligatory custard cream. I've got the dog sat with me because she's a Labrador and there's biscuits around, so why wouldn't she be here? Quick slurp of tea. So I thought what we could quickly do whilst I'm on my 20-minute tea break. I'm sitting on the bench in the sunshine. This is a wonderful spot in the morning to have a tea break if the weather's being kind to you, because the sun is here. This lovely late September, early October sun is glorious. It's about 18, 19 degrees, which for a gardener is the perfect working temperature because it's neither too hot nor too cold. It's just right. Goldilocks was onto something. So I'm just leaving the fig in the bench, walking by the hot and cold borders, which is still hanging on to some remnants of colour. The cannas, actually, it's really funny. The cannas we normally struggle with this year because of the rains, they are sensational. They look the best I've ever seen them. So yeah, they're really, really shining out in this autumn sunlight. Oh, look, going past some of that Irish yews. We've got a good berry year. I noticed one of the hollies in the cedar bed was full, absolutely full of berries as well. And the asters, which are now, I know, not called asters, are nodding at me and bouncing about brilliantly in the breeze as I walk past. So I'm just now walking towards the Milfoy, the tulip meadow. And I need to stop here for a second because, oh my God, the hours we've spent in this little corner of the estate. It borders the woodland and therein lies a tale. And it's nestled between the hot and cold borders and the nuttery, which I know Saul loves, so we'll get a mention of the nuttery in there again, and the woodland. And when we first started at the Hall back in 2014, 2015, this area caused Peter much excitement, and for all the wrong reasons, because the badgers that live in the woodlands would repeatedly, night after night, raid this area for the bulbs. You know, badgers are hungry animals, and when they want to get to the bulbs, there's no way you can stop them. We tried many, many ways, and there is this formidable fencing all around this part of the estate between the formal parts of the garden and the woodland in an attempt to fend off the badgers. Now, when I say formidable, and again, I know this area of the hall intimately now because of the hours we spent here trying to reinforce it. We're talking about some metal fencing that's at least 6 foot tall, and that didn't keep the badgers out. So then we put some more fencing that angles out towards the woodland to make climbing difficult for them. That didn't keep them out, and we would regularly come along here and monitor in the morning when the badgers had been in, which they did most times, and you could see little tufts of the black and white hair, which is so indicative of a badger and no other animal, so you knew the badgers had been in. At the moment, it's looking lovely. The badgers have stayed away. They've got the message. Because what we ultimately did is actually put agricultural livestock fencing all the way around, electric fencing, which just kept them out. So all the hours we spent with all that, the excitement of Peter rushing across, getting very agitated, that's all behind us now. So this is a little bit of modern history that I have on my lap now. I've got many of the work stories that I added to during my time at East Donaldin Hall. The very first one started up on the 27th of May, 2015. So bearing in mind, I'd started at the hall in the autumn of 2014. Terry was still on site very much, and we overlapped a little bit with each other. And in those times, we had lovely chats. And then we picked this up with a gardening notebook. And actually, when I look back at this, it really makes me smile. And you'll get an idea of Terry's unique sense of humour as I give you a few entries here. So, for example, on the 21st of August, I was listing my jobs that I'd done to Terry to make sure that he realised I was taking the job seriously. So I hoed the tomato beds, removed the tops from the tomatoes, hoed fruit trees, cleared out the fruit store, put the Discovery apples in the store, sorted out the mouse situation in the store, sowed some Candelabra primulus, collected primulus seeds, hoed around the cold frames, scrapped the salad sowings and did some new ones. Oh dear, that was not so good. Treated the pelargoniums for whitefly and sorted out the tomatoes for blight. Hoed the leeks and controlled the thrips. Watered pots for the weekend. So there you go. That was my day at the hall. Terry's entry to that. What did you do after coffee break? Smiley face. So, and then what really makes you laugh again. Turn the page to the very next entry from Terry in big letters. I did nothing. So I just think that's brilliant. So, yeah, that gives you a little insight into the banter that we had there. So, again, this is just a little communication between myself and Terry. And I remember this day vividly, actually, because it really scared me. On the 11th of November, 2015, Ian came bursting, actually through, he ran through a hedge, a cherry hedge. He was in such a state. Because he lost his wedding ring. We got married in the July of 2014 and we were obviously still in our lovely honeymoon period and very smitten, as we still are these days. Ultimately, we did find it. Thankfully, we live in a village where the community pulls together and there was somebody with a metal detector. But it was a very frantic few hours before that wedding ring was found. Thank God we did find. So I've put this as a little diary entry, very succinct. Ian lost wedding ring, then found it, thank goodness. And so Terry's put in brackets. Shoot him. There you go. So, yeah, we'll leave it at that. I didn't shoot him. I'm still married to him. I'm going to just nip very quickly through to the lovely, peaceful area of the estate, which is the woodland and the wildflower meadow. I really love this part of the hall. And Lily, who's with me this morning, our black lab, also love this part. Because if I open the gate, there you go. As soon as I open that gate, she's off. I won't see her for about, I don't know how many minutes now. She'll be gone. Oh, hello. You're hovering around this morning. Oh, do you know why? There's a squirrel in the holly tree. No, away. Come away. Right. And then where I'm standing now, and again, this is October, the woodland here, I'm just standing on the edge of the woodland, which is a wonderful woodland of a mixture of, we've got oaks, we've got actually some self-sown elder in there, we've got huge, huge big bird cherries. Now, these are the biggest bird cherries I've ever seen. They're standing way as high as the oaks, but every now and then, because cherries are, they're kind of like a grow fast, die young kind of tree in comparison to the oaks, they do come crashing down. And we've got one in front of us that's the tree surgeons are going to need to clear at some point soon. The girth of the trunk, the diameter of that is a good foot across, just to give you an idea. Wonderful things. Oh, Lily's back. So yeah, normally in April this would be swathes of bluebells, and we'd come in here and clear out any weeds that just block that wonderful view of just pure bluebell magic. So if there were some brambles or nettles and the odd dock in here, we'd come in more in March time before the bluebells had got too advanced, and just clear that through so that when the crescendo during April occurred of this magic of the English woodland, the view is uninterrupted. Sorry for the delay, I'm just trying to shut the gate and hold the mic and the recorder all at once, which is a challenge for a girl. Oh, this has just reminded me, I'm just flicking through the pages of this diary here. This is December 2015, going into Jan 2016. So Peter had this wonderful, wonderful way with words. Obviously, we've got the milfoy, we've got the white border, we've got the garden room. There's some lovely, lovely names of all the different areas at East Donnellan Hall. And this area, Peter stubbornly wanted to continue developing, even though I lost hours to it and it was never successful. We had a fox glovery. So there you go, everybody. We had a fox glovery. And that was in the edge of the woodland border, just under a huge big cedar tree, which did have a lovely canopy that we lifted up to. If you could imagine, the foxgloves would have been pinpricking all through this lovely cedar, but it didn't. It didn't happen. The amount of foxgloves I either transplanted there or sprinkled the seed of to try and establish this foxglovery, what a wonderful word, never happened. We tried it for about, oh goodness knows, this is a 2015 entry. We tried it way up until 2018, if not longer, before. Either I must have persuaded him otherwise, or he probably just thought, you know what, I'm going to stop wasting my money on this on this event because it's just not happening. There's a lovely entry here for 2016. This is a winter job. We had these wonderful, they're metal labels made by Alitags that you stamped the letters onto. You could really get your eye in and make a wonderful job. It was basically a hammer, a whole tin full of the alphabet and various bits of punctuation and numbers. And there you go. You sat yourself in the tool shed, which was called the brew. It wasn't called a tool shed. It was called the brew house, and you'd sit there tapping away, making these labels. And God forbid if you got one of the letters the wrong way round. Oh my God, your heart sunk, because then you had to start the label all over again. Yes, I think I only did that once or twice, but a bit of a buttock clenching moment when that happens. Tigerella is a East Donnellan Hall tomato stalwart. I don't think there was ever a time in the 40 years that Peter and Sarah were at the hall that wasn't grown there. Oh, here we go. Tomato sweet aperitif. You see, that was me introducing something again, being very brave in 2016. And then I can see Peter's favourite, tomato sun gold. He loved them. He ate them like sweets. We could barely keep up with his appetite for picking them. These are the chrysanthemums that we used to grow for the hall that were brought into the house for autumn and winter displays. Pat Miller, May Shoesmith, Cassandra, Doris King, Christmas Carol. I didn't quite get chrysanthemums, but when I saw this one, Jeff Brady is this most amazing recurved chrysanthemum, and it was brick red on the upper side of the petal, and it was almost like this sort of coppery colour underneath. But because it was so strongly recurved, the two-tone effect you got of the flower was stunning. And I'd suddenly got why people would grow chrysanthemums. I still think it's the best-looking chrysanthemum I've ever seen. Jeff Brady, it was a pleasure working with you. Oh, so yeah, and I'm just looking at the wildflower meadow. Now, I'm really fond of this area too. So the wildflower meadow is something that, when I first took it on, it was managed as a perennial meadow. And then via discussions with Peter, we worked out that actually, because he was saying, I want things like cornflowers and poppies and corn marigolds. I said, well, that's an annual meadow, Peter. So what we then did, which I'm really grateful he allowed me to do it, because it's quite a bold thing, was we motivated the whole thing up. Sorry, a bit of gate wrangling there. We motivated the whole meadow up and created an annual meadow. And in that first year, I don't know if any of you remember my days on Twitter, when the tweet I put out of the scene of the corn marigolds, the field poppies and the cornflowers, it went viral on Twitter. And it got, I don't know how many millions of views. It was incredible. But it did look really something special. It's now lending itself more towards a perennial meadow. But we did, for 3 or 4 years, have a mixture of both. We had perennial meadows around the outside of the area. And this is a big, like, probably about 2 acres, this area. And then the middle section, which is like a teardrop section with a few paths running through it, that then we maintained as an annual meadow. So you've got the big hit of an annual meadow with that lovely crescendo in June going into maybe a bit of July with those wonderful, really, really sizzling colours that annual pictorial meadows give you. And then that was all flanked by this wonderful kind of like gentleness of things like wild carrot and yarrow and field scabious, some knapweeds. So yeah, the perennial side was much more of a gentle ebbing and flowing of species coming in, fading away. Yeah, Lily, do you want to go and find a ball? You love running through here, don't you? Off you go, Poppy. Go find it. The hall did open to the public one afternoon a year, and it was always in late May, and it was involving a dog show, the WI doing the most amazing afternoon teas. There were boat rides along the moat. The family used to raffle off the swimming pool, and so a lucky family would have the use of that for one day. It really was a highlight of the local village calendar. We used to do plant sales as well, and so I'd be busy propagating things in the spring to get on the plant table. And oh my goodness, when people first got through the gates of the hall, when they opened up at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, they would often make a beeline for that plant stall, because I used to sell them at really rock bottom prices. And I think for people to get a little essence of what was grown at Dolland, be it the cannas or the cusants or some of the vegetable varieties that we had, people lapped it up, and it would generate about £400 for charity, the plant sales area. So it was that was a really wonderful thing to do. Anything that was self-sown in the hall, I locked onto it and I potted it up and we had it on that table. So there's some notes here for the open day from, I think this was from 2018. There was signage to put out. There's notes here of putting up the signs 2 to 3 weeks before. There were some huge big signs that was a two-person job. There's a huge big list here where the signs go all around the local villages and over onto Mersey Island. Notes on the judges for the dog show. Charlotte was around that year. And then Mrs. Doyle on Mersey was also going to put her hat into the ring for the dog show judging. What else can I find here? Oh, the raffle. Yes, we had a raffle. Sue was in charge of the raffle. The Whalebone, our local pub, always put in a lunch. That was always a good one to get. My mother-in-law, if you may have now come across Granny Anne in this podcast and by the show garden, she would make some fantastic cakes with her WI ladies. Oh, the honey and the jam. Now, there's a chap called Jim who looks after the bees on the estate. Honestly, Jim's honey was absolutely amazing. So Jim, hats off to you for creating amazing honey at the estate. That was always, again, really popular on the open day. Ian was often on the field car parking everybody. We had to get the sheep field ready, and we'd have to ask Janet the farmer to get that done. Hazel, Sarah's friend, took the money. Mike counted the money. And then Tessa from Semaphore Cottage would always help me with a little bit of prep and signage as well for the plant stores. That was really great to have Tessa's involvement. Yeah, so honestly, you can see how the open day was a huge big event for the staff and the family, and a thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyable time at the hall. I know I've talked about the hall lately not having much planting being done, but 2018, the list of plants that the family brought was so lovely. Penstemons, hollyhocks, delphiniums, ancusa, geraniums, roses, onopodiums, clematis. Oh, that's right. We bought a whole load of new iceberg roses for the underneath the Irish yews. That was exciting because they dwindled, and I managed to persuade Peter that we could buy some more. So that was great. Oh, and for the forgotten border, which was the white border. Peter humorously called it the forgotten border because it was around the corner. And he used to accuse us of forgetting it. How could he? What a cheek. Oh, yeah, the sundial roses. These are all the hybrid teas. Deep Secret, which was a dark red. Just Joey, which was a lovely kind of like brick orange colour. Oh, the Alchemist. We had to buy some laburnums and wisterias. Gosh, we used to stock up so much. You do forget, because I say it's not happened recently, but it was really lovely for knowing that the family were really actively involved in the garden. I'm just looking now into the 2019 diaries, but I'm in December here, and this was when we were really focusing on Christmas, because this was a huge event for the family. Very often they'd have friends and all the family members, children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, all staying at the hall. And so in early December, I would make sure that we harvested some holly berries from the woodlands, because if you left it too late, if it got really cold, the pigeons would strip those berries off and you'd have nothing for display. And then about 3 weeks before Christmas, we'd start making wreaths for the door. And one was always made for the hall front door. And then also, Sarah's friend Hazel always got a wreath made as well. And the Donnelland wreath had a little tail on it. It wasn't just a circle. It always had a little tail at the bottom. So that was a lovely thing to add. And then 1 week before Christmas, because we couldn't put this into the house too early because it would dry up and shrivel, we made this wonderful swag, this garland that went all the way up the main staircase. And this staircase was impressive. You can imagine the whole staircase being a jaw-dropping piece of timber work. And we would make this swag that was at least 6 or 7 metres long. And it was all made from materials on the estate. And it was, again, such an enjoyable thing to grab the wheelbarrow, go into the woodlands, harvest the lengths of holly that I knew weren't too prickly. I wasn't stupid. I wasn't going to get the really prickly stuff. And then loads of rose hips, lots of pine cones. There was a really good pine tree just behind one of the cottages on the estate. So we used to go and raid that. Loads and loads of conifer, pine, all sorts of greenery, evergreen greenery. Oh, and crab apples, little tiny apples that we managed to then wire in. They always looked lovely. And cotoneaster berries. All sorts of wonderful, wonderful things. And it was, again, you know, real ceremony, sense of occasion, bringing it into the hall and tying it onto the stairwell with the whole family kind of like trying not to interfere too much, but they really couldn't help themselves. It was a wonderful thing. And we always used to try and do that on, say, the 22nd or 23rd of December and then leave the family to it. They'd have a wonderful time. The stairwell would look fantastic. We'd often do one over the fireplace as well. And yeah, that was a really satisfying job to do. It wouldn't be a Talking Heads podcast without me talking about the weather. So let me do that right now. And the reason I'm going to introduce that is because we have got, and this again, this is a wonderful part of the estate's history. These are all Dimplex charts. So Dimplex produced a rain gauge. From 2006, I've got Terry's weather records written down every single day, how much we had. The one thing that I do find really interesting is from 2006 right up till 2010, every year we had 550 mil or thereabouts, give or take maybe 10 mil, that was literally it, of rain. So in 2006 it was 554 mil. Then Terry throws me a curveball and does me some inches, 22.2 inches, but I've worked out that is still round about 550 mil. And again, same in 2008, 2009 was 22 inches. And then 2010, which is the last one I've got of his, 22 and a half inches. So very consistent. And I know that I've been keeping weather records at the hall since I started. And so from 2014-15 onwards, again, I know that 550 mil is the magic figure that we do generally tend to get at the hall year on year. So consistent. It might be that the months it falls in is changing, but actually the volume that we get in our little region of Essex is exactly the same as it was all those years ago. So obviously I understand the modern day East Donnelland Hall as in the last 10 years or so, but the site has a fantastic and very rich history. So I thought I'd just give you a little insight into that now. In the 10th century, Queen Athelfired, widow of King Edmund, owned the manor of Donnelland or Hillyland, which was valued at £3. There you go. It's selling for slightly more than that at the moment, just like to add. So there was a little bit of royal movement of property. Ultimately, this meant that the monks looked after Donnelland for the subsequent four centuries until the dissolution of monastery in 1539. The first record of a house was established in 1463. This was when the fishing ponds that we still look after these days, devoid of fish, I just have to add, were excavated. And then in 1539, Queen Elizabeth sold the manor to her courtier, and he preferred his second son and left him the property. But then the eldest son got the huff. One night he descended upon the property with a band of armed ruffians and violently ejected his younger brother. They all kicked off Then the Mansion House was recorded in 1638, and that was encircled by the moat. The moat was dredged in the 1980s. 2,000 lead musket balls and cannonballs were found. In 1730, the hall moved into the hands of David Gansel, and he really started thinking about it as a pleasure garden. He planted 50 cedar trees, and he built a farm. He refronted the house, built a north wing, 18 foot high and 38 foot long. Ah, and this is why the brew house is called the brew house, because back in the day when Gansel had it, farm workers came for their daily quota of beer at the brew house. So there you go. And there also was an ice house, which actually Terry did say to me, don't drive over that piece of land on the tractor, on the Kubota, because you'll disappear into a huge big brick cabin about 20 foot deep. I think that's the ice house because it was right by the moat. So it's still there. And I do think that one day it might be unearthed by the modern day equivalent of Time Team. Well, this is a bit juicy. So in 1884, there was the great earthquake and the hall was extensively damaged. But I think there was obviously then some kind of renovations. And apparently older villagers could recall walking as children some distance in underground tunnels from the cellars down to the river. So there may have been some smuggling going on. Another bit of interesting history. One young man bet his brother in a drunken wager that he could leap the moat. He didn't. He drowned. Which I did know that as I came to the hall. And it makes you feel a little bit numb to think that somebody drowned in the moat that we clear out. But there we go. This is rather lovely. In the days when ladies avoided the sun, the drawing room faced north and the kitchen quarters were on the southwest corner. So if you're in the kitchen, you had to get hot and sweaty. But the ladies could be in the drawing room, not any sun getting into their faces. Yeah, now this is modern history that I did know. This must have been Peter and Sarah's additions. So the barrel-roofed conservatory, which is beautiful. The Chinese bridge between the moat and the bog garden. The farm clock and the restored belfry. There is a balustrade, which is the one that edges the white border, stroke forgotten border, that was acquired from a house in Berkshire. And the terrace, now I knew this, the terrace is built from the old pavement of the King's Road, which I think is a lovely little bit of information. So the two hurricanes, 70 trees were lost in one night alone. So there's been a replanting scheme, and a new cedar tree is planted for every special occasion. So there we go, a little bit of insight into East Dunderland Hall's history. I feel very lucky to have been part of it. That's the rose prunings going on the compost heap. I'm going to just check, because this might be one of the few times I can still do this. If you stand on top of the compost heap at the moment and peer into the barn that you can see over the back. Oh yes, there they are. The two barn owls. That little sentry posts are both... Oh, one's just... Oh, that's lovely. One's just going up to the other one. There's two there. Looking at me, I'm looking at you. It's been a pleasure to see these birds this spring and summer and going into the autumn. I wish you all the very best of luck for your future lives in Dunedin Woods. Right, let me navigate getting down this huge compost heap. Whoop. So I thought it was appropriate to end my little episode on East Dunland Hall. Oh, 2 o'clock, in the kitchen garden. And if you ever told me as a young budding gardener in my teens that I would be looking after a walled kitchen garden, I would be pinching myself and thinking that you were telling me fibs, because I never in my wildest dreams anticipated looking after this space. And I have loved it. It's taught me lots. There's sunny parts, there's shady parts, there's a fruit store, there's a huge big fruit cage, there's an orchard, there's a big walnut tree, there's a wonderful lean-to greenhouse, there's espalier pears, asparagus bed, loads of vegetable beds. And I've had so much fun and enjoyment here, growing food for the family. It's really been an absolute pleasure. So for the moment, I'm just standing in the corner looking over the beds. We've talked before on the podcast about how they're now all covered in weed control fabric. To keep the weeds down for as long as possible till new buyers can be found. But back in the day, this is my memories are going to be of, and I'm just casting my eye around, there's some globe artichokes in front of me. Sarah adored globe artichokes. The bed that I'm standing next to right now is one of the shadier, cooler beds, so I always used to grow my leeks and the Florence fennel in there. and the bed at the top corner was full of winter brassicas, loads and loads of winter brassicas, all sorts of Savoy cabbage like tundra, the curly kale. I introduced to the family Cavolo Nero kale. I was very excited about that. Brussels sprouts. Peter used to love having Brussels sprouts for as long a season as possible, so we used to pick them in September. We used to grow really early varieties and then really late ones as well, going right back into February or March as long as they didn't bolt. So lots of happy hours spent here. And the asparagus bed that I'm stood in front of here, again, if we could cut some of that for Peter's birthday, which is in early April, then he was a happy man. He was a very happy man. I don't think I'm ever going to work in such a big fruit cage again. It's a huge, big structure, a good 10 metres by 20, full of lots of raspberries, lots of currants. We've got red currants, black currants, blueberries in the corner. The cherries, oh my gosh, the cherries. When they start fruiting in June, many relatives would call round in the month of June because so we'd allow them to hang there almost black, ripe and full of juice, absolutely amazing. And then there was also Peter's lovely collection of gooseberries. Lots of lovely cordon gooseberries, greens, yellows, reds, desserts, culinaries, all sorts of things. So I could do a whole episode about this kitchen garden here. I will keep touching back to the kitchen garden and the other areas of East Dunallan Hall, because how could I not? It's taught me so much. It would be a real shame for it to not be kept alive in our memories and through my conversations with Saul. So do expect some diary entries to keep popping up. You might be able to hear the hum of the mower in the background. That's AD. He's still going to be kept on by the family because they appreciate that the grass will still grow. So someone needs to be cutting the grass, and that's AD's job. We wish him the very best. But yeah, I am going to sign off now. I could have made this episode last twice as long because there's so much history here and memories for me. I will bid East Dunallan Hall farewell for now. And thank you so very much for teaching me all you have and making me a far better gardener. That brings us to the end of today's episode. We hope you enjoyed listening and look forward to you joining us again for the next instalment. If you'd like to contact myself or Saul, we're free to chat on our social media platforms. I'm on Instagram at headgardenerlc, and you can find Saul on Twitter at gardeningsaul. Any review you'd like to leave us via your podcast provider would be gratefully received.
Long summer days are the high point of any gardener's life, as we'll spend all the hours of the day enjoying our outside spaces and the plants that bring us so much joy. Gardening at this time of year is such a great pleasure, and we hope to keep sharing this all summer long.
And so, until the next episode of Talking Heads, goodbye!
Goodbye!